Blog Talk Radio.
If I sit and the words keep coming, they won't go away, they just keep coming.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow with just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on Facebook.com/TBI Network or at TBIFN.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Solutions Today, and my name is Bill. Happy New Year to everyone, and hope you had a good Christmas, and hope your New Year is going well. Anyway, and just want to tell you what the program is going to generally be about, if you haven't read the write-up to the program, and on my ongoing series of sharing whatever my life experience and related to both life and my recovery or my dealing with my TBI, this program is going out interesting topic. And remember, the number to call in, if you want to call in, is 424-243-9540. That's 424-243-9540. Anyway, this program is going to be a program on a particular issue that happened. And like you see from the title, it's dealing with what I consider advanced brain injury survivors. That includes myself. And, you know, you reach a level of TBI in which you have a certain situation that, you know, you get to a point where when you're first injured, the coping strategies, you know, you have all these issues, you learn how to deal with them. And as you advance to it, you become highly functional, like examples of some people I know. And you also become, you know, capable of dealing with some of the stresses of the injury. And you get pretty effective. Unfortunately, that is something that doesn't always work. And you have to, in other words, you get functioning. And in the, and when you're beginning with the brain injury, you have, what's the word? You have a basic issues that you're dealing with. And you have no ability to you know, control it initially, like most people with TBI. And what happens is you begin to over years, in my case of therapy, going back many years. And stuff like that, in which you're able to, you know, in which you're able to, in which you're able to, you know, over time. And in my case, it was years. And I used to react to various different things severely. And I had no ability to, you know, do it, except with the long issue of therapy. And just constantly looking into looking into ways with the neuropsychologist, with support groups and other things, and loads of medication at the time, I will tell you, because I was so bad at one time. In my earlier injury, I mean, I would fly off at the slightest thing. One of the worst things was when I bought a car. This is probably a year or so after my injury. I bought a Subaru, and my aunt came down to, at that time, I lived in Roswell or Alpharetta, and she came down. And this gives you a concept of how quickly you could react, and for the reason. It is redefined. It's often comes off as rage. In reality, it can be frustration, and it causes the chemical impulse of the brain area to circumvent, and it causes you to it causes you to sometimes get into a situation where you're going to do it. In this particular case, I went into a situation where I was registering the car. Sorry, I'm a little distracted. I went into a situation where I had no ability to, at all, no ability to, deal with the situation in a calm way. So I'm going in and I'm registering. Sorry, I got off topic. I was trying to email someone. I was going to have someone on today, and apparently they haven't made it for some particular, and so I'm going to have to go on without it. I'm just sending them a reminder email and stuff like that. But anyway, so I'll get that off. I'm doing three things at once. And so I went to, I went to various things, and I went to, a Kroger where you register the car. And when you register a car, you go into, at the time it was right down the block, so I'm trying to register the car, and apparently the guy that sold me the car had no, didn't sign the paper. So I'm over there waiting in line, not small line, and it was in a Kroger, like a small little window. There's a great place to, used to be great. I hated when they stopped doing it and you had to go to the office. It was easy just to do your shopping. When you had the chance, you could register your car or get the title or whatever motor vehicle information you needed to take care of. And so, but anyway, so I go there and the lady tells me you don't have a signature. My aunt's standing there. And I went nuts, absolutely nuts, out of this minor frustration. The guy was not going to be that far away. He lived in the area. All I had to do was get with my aunt, get on the phone with him, call him, I had his number, and get together with him, and the guy would have signed it. You know, it would have been another 45 minutes. I went absolutely crazy in just frustration, just a minor thing. And that's how severe it was then. I would go into these various things, and it comes off as rage, but what it really is a misfiring and of dealing with things, and very difficult to at times deal with things like that. And but that was then. This was in the first stages of my injury, in which I had so many issues to deal with, both motor skill-wise, in terms of dealing with other issues that come up. Like, at the time I played tennis, I still play tennis, I couldn't even see one ball. I would see two. And I would also, I had such spatial issues, I used to crack up and start going nuts because the cars, when they were like five car lengths away, would appear to be closer. Same thing when I played tennis. Matter of fact, to this day, I'm still a little uncomfortable when people are close to me on the tennis court, because when they are far away, they seem closer. And so all of these are the typical issues that you suffer from. Well, after years of therapy, in my case, most people would agree in my life, too. I become, you know, very highly functional and extremely, highly functional in terms of my injury. I was going to have a co-host on, but apparently he's indisposed, and I was going to have him share his story. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to wing it, because he hasn't called in and haven't heard from him, so I can't. I'm going to have to do it on my own. So I'll just do his part and use some of the parts I know about as analogies with other people and stuff like that, and just use my experience and then take calls at some point if people want to talk. Anyway, so as I see this, so what happens is after about, you know, 90 years. And to give you an idea, this is what I was going to have my friend do, to co-host it. One of the areas of the brain that causes this is the limbic system. And that's areas on the outer edges of the brain that deal with chemical reactions. So when you take a hit on the head, that area is very vulnerable. That's where a lot of these uncontrolled emotions pop up. That's what they really are, is unfettered emotions that pop up in your head. And what happens is, as you advance, like I have with my TBI, and I become very adept at controlling all these various emotional charges, like paranoia I used to have, I've dealt with that. I circumvent it. You create little things on controlling strategies when those emotional impulses happen. For instance, and then I'm going to give examples of where that doesn't work. And I had, by the way, just to give you a foresight, not too long ago, I dealt with a frustration and something happened. But I'll get into that later. I'm going to first explain what happens in your effectiveness in dealing with the therapy. Because as you deal with the therapy, when you're into it, you deal with the therapy and you deal with the coping strategy, and you become effective at reengaging into the world at large. In my case, I'm very functional. I do highly active things. I play guitar and sing songs with other musicians, and I do go perform in public. I write my own songs, and it's one of the skills I do. At one time, to earn extra money, I don't need to do it anymore, I taught tennis. And it turns out that both those things are now therapy for people with TBI. They have a tennis rehabilitation center, and I actually taught some people who was trying to rehabilitate themselves from some of the motor loss with brain injury and hand-eye coordination. One of the best ways to get your sight back when you see double is to, well, go out there and hit a tennis ball. Eventually, the ball becomes one. And so they have now in New Jersey places where people go to rehab from these injuries, stroke and TBI and brain injury. And the other area of therapy is now music. It's been studied and proven when you play music, you're 90%, the brain functioning goes up tenfold when you listen to music, excuse me. When you play music like I do, create it, write it and create it, it goes up a millionfold, more than anything you can do, more than calculus. So it's actually a brain exercise, what you're doing. Now, must understand one thing, that people on both outside and some people that have the TBI, the one fact on all the related theories about TBI, there is one fact as of technology of today, and that is neural tissue does not heal. That's either nerve tissue, brain tissue, which is or your nerves. You cut a nerve in your body, and it's never going to stay. It's going to stay severed. There's no healing of that. You know, you can't put anything on there. You can't stitch it together. Same thing with the brain tissue. Doesn't heal. And if it's damaged, it stays damaged. Now, we create all sorts of coping strategies to learn with our higher functioning on deal with that. So I had all these milieu of issues, and I have developed so many strategies on how to circumvent it, to prevent those things from, I mean, at one time I was so bad, I told you the time where I was trying to register my car with my aunt. Well, there was many other times where I was nearly arrested 3-4 times in my local town. And I was just fortunate enough that it was an educated police department who knew me and had experience and actually helped me when I took my first bike spill on the road and picked me up in the car. I had like 2 occluded injuries, and they knew me and they let me go, and they didn't react to me in an evil way. One time I was trying to smash a payphone, and the cop says, you know, if I wasn't going here, I'd arrest you. Then he looked at me and says, oh, you're that guy from that had that crash on the bike in the car. Oh, all right. Look, go home. If you can't make it home, I'll take you home. All right? I don't want to have to arrest you. Get out of here. Anyway, so I was treated because they knew me. They knew me from my complex, and I was known. And so they treated me with a little more, you know, if I was in a stranger town, they wouldn't have been so kind. Anyway, and as I went along and as I went to various different places, I learned through neuropsychology to deal with this, in which I could re-enter the world. And one of the areas that I worked on was I play tennis. Well, in the beginning of playing tennis, I got so bad at some points because, unfortunately, tennis happens to be one of those areas that you react. I see my co-host arrive. Good. He'll give you a system. After I finish this point, I'll introduce him. He probably ran late. He's busy. Oh, no, he's gone. All right. Anyway, so what we're doing anyway, but needless to say, tennis is a sport that I play in competition. And unfortunately, tennis in the competition brings out those emotional responses to a tenth degree, because tennis is a very animalistic sport. That, what's the word, it causes you to be very aggressive. And so you're instantly in a, almost on the state of exploding at all times. Probably normal people, but when you have a TBI, it's more pronounced. And so I've learned to circumvent that and control that. It took me years. In the beginning, it was so bad, I would blow up at people on the court. One guy I chased off the court, and the only reason I chased him off the court is because he hit a winning shot, and I got mad at him. I started chasing him around the court, and I had courts that were like where you had to walk down to them, and he ran away and got out of the court and ran in the gate, got in his car, and left me there. And he was smart. He avoided me, went around the net a couple of times, ran into the gate, grabbed his bag, went out the gate, went up the stairs and got in his car and ran away before I had a chance to catch him. And, you know, he knew, I don't know what I was going to do, but it was just, he was a friend. He called me later and he says, are you all right? He says, yeah, I'll play you again with you. Don't worry, I know how to avoid you. I'm just going to stay on the guy's side with the gate from now on. so meaning the exit was by one flight of the fence. So I've learned to deal with those issues. And I've learned over time to circumvent things. It's like when you get certain kinds of feelings in which you really think you're not, you have been in the state, I've learned to lay down. All of these things are wonderful, and I've gotten so good at it, I can function. I deal with high-pressure situations. I'm looking at this incident that happened around the Christmas holidays. I look back, and I'm trying to calculate when the last time I had an instance, and I couldn't remember. And I'm talking about I had to deal with over the last, say, 10 years, some really high-pressure situations. And I had to deal with some difficult things in terms of my care. Just 4 years ago, I walked off a tennis court and after 2 or 3 weeks had so many symptoms in which I was accumulating water that my stomach was hanging down like I looked like a Buddha or something, or a Buddha, you know. And I went in and I went to various places. Anyway, I see my co-host has finally arrived. I'll see if he wants to talk, or if he not, he can hang up again. But in these ways, in those pressure situations, part of my coping strategies was to deal with what is it? In my case, I had to deal with going into the hospital, open heart surgery, and I had to deal with highly pressure situation in which I wasn't sure whether I was going to live or not. And I had to deal with making decisions on my life and the procedures I was going to follow. And I did it with faith and coping strategies. Anyway, let me take this call, see if my co-host has arrived, and we see if we can slip him in. Hello.
Hey, Bill.
You're on the air. Are you available or you're indisposed?
I'm talking to you right now, Bill. I can talk.
All right. That's okay. I've done it. I've made a mistake. And you're on air now. And what I've already discussed with the audience, the general act, and I've gone into the first stages of my career or my TBI. In the beginning, as I gained coping strategies. So to fill you in, I gave a little bit of a rundown. I want you to discuss, as I mentioned, the issues that I suffered from. You probably heard some of it, right?
Yes.
Is a small overview of the area of the brain. I described it as the limbic system. And then we'll get into some of your personal experience of initial brain injury and recovery, and then we'll get into the more advanced things. So go ahead and give the limbic system. Audience, what this is this is the area of the brain that Mark is going to discuss that has to do with the actual areas of the brain that cause these emotional reactions. I'll let you go, Mark. Thank you for coming on board.
Yeah, Bill, thanks a lot. So what we're talking about, folks, is the limbic system of the brain. The limbic system is at the very top of the brain. It's the emotional brain. It also ties in with the prefrontal cortex of the brain, which is your control tower. And it's where anger, it's where personality change, it's where your fuse can go off. First off, I'm 64 today, but I'm a type A personality. And I experienced a situation, and Bill and I talk a lot about these, where there's a trigger. There's something that goes on that can set you off.
Mark, isn't it correct? It can often be very insignificant.
Yeah, it can be
it could be very insignificant what triggers you. Or causes the frustration.
It ends up being that, you know, when we look back at hindsight, we look back that it was insignificant, right?
Yes. For instance, I mentioned something already to my audience when I was first injured. I went to get banged down by the Kroger, my title on a car I bought. And the guy forgot the signature. Now, in hindsight, there's no reason to get frustrated and mad. All I got to do is contact the guy from my aunt's cell phone, get him, and he'll go sign it, and I go back to the – but I got so frustrated, I go – or, in your case, dealing with a steam room that's not running yet, okay?
Right.
Now, there are sometimes, you know, the surprising fact about this, as you talk about this limbic system, this is why I don't always think it's rage. It's more frustration can cause it. That just snaps you for some reason.
And
you know, in our cases, the reality is, and I just went through this with myself here, I've dealt with major things that you think would – I was in the hospital getting my chest cut open. How more stressful or vulnerable could I be? You dealt with major family issues, debts in the family, various debts in parts of your family, your father, your wife's brother, your wife's father, issues with children, all sorts of major issues that normally you would think. And yet we dealt with those, and yet a smaller thing would be the one that you would think would set you off. You know, it would surprise you. When you maybe it's because on the big things we're so used to coping with it, maybe we brace ourselves for those things more and are more diligent, you know, something like that. Maybe we let our guard down on the smaller things. Let me get your feedback on that.
Well, I think what happens, you know, when this happens – in a lot of ways, it is insignificant, and I think what you got to do when this trigger comes out and you go off the way you do, it's because you're frustrated. And I think what happens there is that what you really have to do is when you're in a situation that goes on, you got to see it, feel it coming, you know, and think it through a little bit. I think able-bodied people, Bill, and the audience, able-bodied people have issues as well. But I think when you have a brain injury that affects your prefrontal cortex and it affects your decision-making or processing of how you're going to respond to a certain stimuli, you got to be cognizant. You got to be aware of that, you know. And it's easier said than done, but
But when this incident happened, and in my case, I'm going to bring it up because it triggered this program. I hadn't, like I said, I can't remember. I counted the incidences over the last 10 years. I've gone back and 15 years. And I'd say the incidences of me of flying off like this are like every 3 or 5 years. And that's going through some serious stuff. Like I said, I was in a hospital getting my chest cut open. You had issues, right? Your incidents when you had something, that was 3 or 4 years ago. Before that, it's been a while. So what I'm saying is we're talking about strategies to our audience, but we're also dealing with what we consider, and there have been incidences I know of other high-functioning people. What do I mean by high-functioning? We're not on medications, and we manage to go, 5 years before something happens? That means, as I stated in my opening for the program and wrote up, that's a 99.9% success rate. I mean, we're talking, so when I had this incident, which I was totally caught by surprise about, and I'll tell you what led me up into it, and this actually had a valid, what I consider a valid reason. I have an aunt. I had been in contact and found out over a week that she was going for procedures. And then I get bits and pieces of information from various cousins over the time. And I'm trying to get in just information. And the bits and pieces I got had a lot to do with heart treatments. And I'm finding out she's going back and forth into the hospital. And she doesn't want to respond. I've been told she doesn't want to respond, so I think I sent the emails. So I'm trying to get through. And it's building a frustration. Now, what some of my family doesn't understand, there are certain family members that you've experienced this with certain people in your life. And even though me and my aunt love each other, we're kind of different people, meaning we don't do the same things. You know, we're not going to share. I'm not going to talk tennis or my stock. You know, she has a certain style of life that's different than mine. We used to be much more closer. People have different styles of what they like. If she, her idea of living my life would be contrary to me, like living her life, she couldn't do it in a million years. She'd go nuts. Same thing with me. But the bonding that I have with this particular aunt is humongous. So as I was going through that, I'm almost joined at the bone with this particular aunt. It goes back. She represents and is part of my entire lineage of my family. It goes to my mother, my father, my uncle. And it's almost on a sub-level of pain you feel when you're that close to someone where you shudder at the thought of them being illness. And it was building up in me as I wasn't getting real information and not hearing. And I began to worry. Well, I'm pretty cool about it, and I suppressed it. And I finally called one cousin's husband, and I got a feedback. So that was on a Thursday. And then the next day, I had spoken to one cousin like on Tuesday, so it's been 3 days. So by Friday, I just was sitting there, and I didn't correlate all the other information. I just says, well, let me call my aunt again. This is Friday. It's been days. And I get no answer. Well, I snapped at that point. I didn't remember the information I had, and I started desperately calling cousins. And I just happened to call the one cousin who had called me Tuesday because her number was right in my caller ID, so it was easy. And by that time, I was off the charts. And I just raged. Not rage, more frustration. I'm freaking. And I don't think they quite understood the difficulty. And because this is what it reminded me of personally, I'm going to tell you. There was a time 10 years ago. This is a true story. I haven't shared this with anybody. This put me in the same place. When my mother died, there was one person that made people go find her in her apartment. Do you know who that was? Me. Do you know how many times I called her to get an answer before I called authorities? 100 mark, hour on the hour. In a brain injury spin out until I finally got somebody to go there, police or someone in the building. I don't remember how. Until I finally snapped and the cop called me from the phone and told me what happened. I lost it. It's the only time in my life when other cousins at that time came over. I, through all my life, I've been a survivor. It's the only time in my life when that happened to me. After the buildup, I wanted to die. It's the only time I ever wanted to die. So when this happened with my aunt and I put her at the same bone level as my aunt, if anything happened, I would freak. So as I was building up, I was in that mode. It triggered something in me where I just lost it. And literally where I was in that mode psychologically. And I told you, I've never really alluded this to even my family, but it was an all-day thing. I kept calling for like a day, every 20 minutes. I was so obsessed with it, I couldn't stop. Until I finally called everybody I knew. I was blasting phone calls, and until the final clicker was, the cop picked up the phone or called me from the phone and told me on the phone. And I lost it. And it's like I said, during the night that when my cousins came over and I couldn't even move, it's the only time in my entire life, no matter what I've ever faced, that I ever thought, and I actually said to God, if you take me now, I'd be fine with it. And I would have been. And so that triggered the kind of frustration in me that I don't know if it's justifiable. I still regret doing it to my cousin and stuff like that. Did that make sense to you at all? Mark?
Yes.
Yeah, no, you see what I mean?
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. But what I'm telling you, based on what I told you a little bit earlier.
Sorry, I talk too much.
No. The brain is constantly recovering, and I do a lot of work with working with people and helping them recover emotions, and the emotions and the anger can come out. And as Bill likes to call them, we call them gerbils. They come out. And it's important to recognize and know ahead of time that something's going to happen. I've gotten to the point now, I'm 23 years post-injury. 99 was my accident. And my wife will tell you. But hold on a second. Maureen, my wife of 41 years, will tell you and tell everybody Marcus made a very good recovery in the emotional area. But it's taken a while.
But hold on, Mark. I'm not saying that's what my point is or the basic of the program is. We're at 99.9%. What happened to me when I did that with my cousin 3 or 4 weeks ago, venting like that frustrationally on the phone with a very big emotional trigger, by the way. It really upset me, okay? I just suppressed it, right? I'm just telling you how, in that particular case, there was really an emotional reaction, right? And that's in some ways is not flipping, okay? Being concerned like
right.
that is not flipping, right? But over the years, either one of us, probably this could happen every 3 or 5 years. That's a 99%, like you said, with you and Maureen have concluded. And me too. We function in the world. I play tennis successfully. If I feel upset at tennis, you know what I do now? If I feel myself going, I'll walk off the court. I have done it. And
right.
so, but, and then there's another factor. It's how you choose and where you choose to go. Because occasionally, in my particular case, the reason why I would call a cousin or a friend is because I would call safe people to go to in those times. How many times have me and you called each other venting? We've done it a million times.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And the problem is with these particular cousins, because I have them as my executors, I had plans to have them on some of my emergency contacts. I was using them as one of those safety valves, right? And it wasn't so much anger, it was a venting, like I would do with you. So you have to be careful, like you could do with members of your family. Now, in fairness to people, we and you have discussed this, not everyone gets it that quickly. They take it as somebody would in the public or a doctor's office. Your family is super educated. Not everybody is like that. And me and you have discussed this. And this helps our audience understand how the caregivers can't be held responsible for not getting this. Because me and you know, if we go back in time to before our injury, when we were just salesmen and sales managers and just going about our business, right? We would not have been understandable if we saw people reacting like they had a brain injury in that time, would we?
No.
So we must understand and not hold it against them, because it takes something very special to understand that. And it takes time and education. Like I said, the reason why I think your family is exceptional, not only were they around you, they actually went to all the meetings and stuff, even support groups I saw them at all the time.
Right.
A college education. I mean, they know more about it than the average Joe. And I'm going to give you another example. You travel in the medical field, right? You're well known. You hang out with doctors, you know, right? You've been through hospitals, VA, and we know certain physicians who handle brain injury, but what about the other medical professionals who are into other specialties? Do they understand brain injury at all?
No. Bill, to answer your question, if you look at the internal medicine doctors or physicians that used to be called yesteryear, your internal medicine physicians today.
Right.
A lot of your standard medicine people, doctors, are not cognizant or nor aware of the intricacies of brain injury, traumatic brain injury, especially the neurobehavioral part. So when you get into the neurobehavioral, that's my specialty, understanding neurobehavioral issues. I have a panel, I have a board of therapists, doctors, and all over the country and also into Canada now. So we talk about these things. We have software programs we're putting out in the area of neuroplasticity to help people.
Hold on. That's good, Mark. Hold on, Mark.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do is we're going to continue talking for a few more minutes about this, and I want to hear some of your stuff. I'm going to give out the phone number just in case people want to call in. I haven't done it, so let me do it, okay, real quick. It's 1, if anyone wants to call in when we start taking calls in a few minutes, 10 minutes or so, you call 424-243-9540. That's 424-243-9540. And stuff like that. Call in that number. And when you call in, I'll make sure to see if you want to. And I'll see if you want to. And stuff like that. Hello, Mark?
Yep, right here.
All right, and I have some people who call that I don't know if they want to receive. So if I bring them on, and I'll ask them if they want to go on the air. If not, I'll just put them back on mute. Well, I see them calling, so you have to ask them first. Anyway,
okay.
So you agree with me then that in our particular case, and there is other people that this has happened to, we're dealing with the people that have already. How, like you said, Maureen, your wife would say, you've recovered pretty well dealing with emotionally, as I have, except there is, like, every 3 to 5 years, I mean, I can go back, and it's usually about every 3 to 5 years, I'll have some incidences like you said, the gargoyles come out. And what do you think, the best way I can think to deal with it, ironically, and remember, we have to have compassion for the people that we have. What I think the best way would be to maybe have a list of people that would be correct options if you feel something coming on. That when you feel that, in other words, since we're beyond seeing doctors all the time, we have certain friends, and maybe it could be created through a support group. And certain friends like me, I have you, we've been doing it for almost 20 years now, calling each other about venting, and we vented at each other. And so that, and then there are certain family members. In your case, you probably could call any of your family.
Right.
And they would get it. Am I right?
Yes.
But
yes.
But guaranteed, that would not be the same with other members of your family. Might not get it that are distant.
No. That you're exactly correct. My immediate
yes.
family.
And we can't blame them because we ourselves know in our hearts this is important. So people don't blame their caregivers or their loved ones. We ourselves know in our hearts before our brain injuries. We wouldn't have known shit. We would have been so myopic into our lives. We would have just did, just keep away from the nutcake, right? Seriously, right?
Yes. Yeah, so what we're talking about, we're speaking to the audience here about just what I've experienced emotionally.
Shoot,
23
go ahead,
years
please.
Post, Bill's less than that. The injury,
not by much.
Not by much, but nonetheless, I have three kids, adults today, my wife and I, and we have four grandkids. And typically with family and stuff, nothing happens. As a result of my life change, brain injury, we've had some family challenges with other members, and they've gotten through their challenges much better, okay? So as a family, we're very close, very close. Now, my family up in the Chicago area where I'm originally from, they don't see it. They don't understand. And they haven't been part of these emotional swings, you know.
But remember, but you still are, you still have great love and affection for all of them and them to you.
Oh, God, yes, yes. But
yes,
I study brain injury.
I know.
It's my
right.
life.
It's not theirs. It's not theirs. It's not. And they don't always get it.
It's not theirs. And one thing I will tell the audience, Bill, is that traumatic brain injury is
But this is an important point for the audience, because, and I'm going to tell you a truth, that can be quite painful, because now we're mature and you understand why your family up north doesn't quite get it for their own reasons, how we wouldn't understand. Earlier in my injury, there was a point where my mother didn't understand. She was still alive. And it was bad for me. I mean, she just had all sorts of incorrect assumptions and stuff. And she couldn't get over it. You know, she just said, get rid of the doctor. Well, the doctor was telling me, based on my neurologist, that I had fractures in my skull and MRI to show my injury. Okay, and so
yes.
so when I went to you know what my doctor at that time told me to do, I don't know if you went through this when the family up north was probably a bit more challenged years ago when you were up, they told me to keep away from her for a while, don't talk to her, you know, now I'm a little more like we're mature about it, so you don't worry about it one way or the other, and you just deal with it as it is and don't blame them, of course. But initially, it almost feels like you heard about it initially, and some people may go through this. And now it does change how, expect people. Do you agree with me on that area too?
I definitely do. There's no doubt.
Yeah. And think about all the caregivers that we have met through the support groups, and I met a few. I know you've met tons of these. Like, by the way, everyone, Mark runs a support group. It's called the Seminole Spirit. We'll make sure to give you the information so you can maybe hook up with him. It would be a very thing to do, and he does it nationwide on a teleconference, and so I'm going to make sure he gives you all his information at some point, if he chooses to, because it's a very valuable resource, especially for people that are new to injury, but even for people that are mature. But anyway, as you see in the people that have come through your group now, it's going on 15 years or so, how many of the caregivers are constantly asking you questions and don't understand it? It's almost like I've almost suggested to you, you might start two groups. One is the Seminole Spirit, and then call it the Seminole Spirit for caregivers, because you could use a separate group just for the caregivers.
Well,
right?
But Bill, let me explain to you.
You let the caregivers come to the Seminole Spirit. Is what you do.
Yeah,
right?
The Seminole caregivers are part of our group.
Okay, good.
Because caregivers, we are a speech group. We study aphasia. We study pragmatics. We have stroke survivors, TBI survivors all over the country, and we're virtual. We're on the Zoom platform. And I have an IT man in my group. I hired a speech therapist. She comes out. She's a professional. And we're very good. We're global. We just picked up a young lady in France who had a TBI in a car accident. So we're a special group. But caregivers are important because we hear from
Mark,
them.
While you're on it, I'm going to give out the number of the program if people want to call in. Why don't you, since the audience is fresh and they're out there, why don't you give the information for your group? Name and what contact information, either through email or phone number.
The name of the group, the name that we meet every other Friday, biweekly.
Okay, go.
It's 12 noon until 2 p.m. On the Zoom platform. And you can contact me at 404-434-7452.
Repeat the number.
404-434-7452. My first name is Mark.
Give your name.
My last name is Halvorsen, Halvorsen.
Name of the group again?
The Seminole Spirit.
Spell it out.
S-E-M-I-N-O-L-E, Seminole Spirit.
With Mark. Phone number again.
404-434-7452.
And what I'm going to do for the audience, there's a section on the online portal where they look at the program and see the write-up. I'm going to make sure to add in your group name and your number. Is it okay to give you a number out on that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Matter of fact, I may have you do it. I'll just write it up. And I'll put it on the comments so people can look for the comments anyway. So now since we're on this discussion, and let me give out the number of the program, and the number is it's one to call in. Anyone wants to call in and ask a question or present something that's similar along the lines, it's 424-243-9540, and that's 1-424-243-9540. Now, since we've decided that for higher functioning people, what I call the 99ers, right? Meaning 99% of the time we deal with these things, okay?
Yes.
What do you think, in your experience, I already have my theory, what do you think is the best coping strategy for me or you? Like, my instance was that picking someone who might not have understood it. So I should have gotten in touch with someone that understood that. What would you have? What would you, to circumvent when it happens with you, would there be a way that we can train ourselves to minimize it, especially if we're going to do it in public? Remember, in my case, it was on a private phone call to a family member. The danger is if you do this in public, right? Right. In my case, you know, you could be arrested or something. People would think you're a lunatic, right?
Let me ask you a question. I think when you feel your trigger, when you feel yourself frustrated, coming on, what you really have to do is leave the scene, leave the location. Now, if you're on the phone or you just have to say.
Do you think of coming up with a list of people that would be the best ones to call?
Well, the best one to call, because I do have a wife, a significant other, would be Lori. Okay, because she understands. She'd be the first person I'd call. The second person I called would be my daughter, Jackie, and she doesn't understand. I've done a number of podcasts with a future client of mine, coast to coast. Jackie has listened to them. My brother, Chris, has listened to it, but my daughter, Jackie, got what I was saying. My brother, Chris, didn't. And that says a lot about the injury. It says a lot about coping with the injury. So I think you have to have a platform of people, but you have to feel it coming out. You know, you really do. You know?
If we're at 99%, there's a chance we could. Now, in my case, there is one thing I'm going to add before I maybe take a call. I have gone through, I'm dating, And most of the dates,
yeah.
I've been on a few with different women. But it's still at the light stage, meaning it's just, you know, getting to know you, meet for a get-together, just, you know, subtle attraction, a few you're going to ask out. You're in the process of starting it, okay? Well, guess what conversation is going to have to center on one day, in my case? When it gets serious at some point, I'm going to have to discuss this kind of an issue with the person I'm with.
Yeah,
so this is the conversation.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm wondering at one point, because you don't want to do it, you know, when you're just making yourself attractive, playing the guitar in my case, and other things, you don't want to kill it on the first or second date when you're having a dinner and all of a sudden lay this out, okay? So,
right.
You know, you kind of got to, I don't say hide or lie, but you got to be deceitful, but there's got to be, you know, you want to wait until she's hooked a little bit and she has an understanding before you dump it on her. And
right,
but this is the kind of conversation that you're going to have to prepare someone for. Now, because we must remember something, Mark. There was a time in our first parts of our injury, we were on medication for this stuff, and we had much more of a frequency. There are some people in the TBI world who are still at that stage. If we were at a stage where we had these incidences of having these fryouts, and it was once a day or three or four times a day, that would be another matter. And for those people, it's time to see a doctor, correct?
Right. Yes. Oh, God, yes, yes.
Yeah, you understand? I mean, we're talking about, that's why I call it, and I had one line I wanted to tell people. When this happened, I had two emotions. One is I felt bad that it happened, right? Especially because I adore my cousin, love her very much, and I know I just went off the rails, okay? And it can be quite scary, especially since we're New Yorkers and Easterners as well. It kind of elevates it a little bit more. And it sounds horrible and hateful and all that stuff. But when we do these things, right, and when I felt bad, but the other part of me felt actually proud because I thought about it and I realized, you know, last incident was probably with me was 5 years ago or more. And I thought of you, and I realized the last time you ever did it was the only time you ever did it was at the club, and you had been through all sorts of pressures. So had I. I went through heart surgery. Did I crack up then? You saw me in the hospital. I didn't crack up. Talk about a pressure situation, right? So, and I dealt with you in pressure situations, huge pressure, not even close to. On the level of highness, way over a steam room being shut down or not working, right?
Right.
I mean, think about it. Not even right. So, I guess the one thing we could do is make sure that if we feel it coming on. So my feelings were when it happened, I felt bad it happened. Certainly apologized to my cousin for it happening, to exposing it, since she didn't get it, and she wasn't as prepared. It was more like your cousin, Chris, your brother Chris, as opposed to your daughter Jackie, who would know it instantly. By the way, I would think that because we would have it where we're both, where you concentrate on people, but the other part of me was proud because I didn't realize it. I'm at about a 99% clip of success rate. And then I realized you were too. That's where I put in that we're high functioning. And it's only that 1% or whatever that happened. And you know what I was ready to say? The reality is if you're at a 99.5%, you're doing this every 3 to 5 years, occasionally you rattle off like that, it's the best I've got.
Yes.
That we can try to do the extra little thing. But if you're at that, you could talk to any doctor. And if you told them that's how you're dealing with it, you ain't getting any better than that. Seriously. And, you know, we're not
well,
the person.
Paul, Bill, I, Yeah, I need to just come in and let you and the audience know that Maureen, my wife, is just asking me it's time for us to
okay,
go.
Yes.
Okay,
yes. I'm going to end
the I just want to say thank you, guys. Thank you,
I knew she would pull you at 11. Tell her I knew that.
She's pulling me, and I appreciate the conversation and the just the exchange of what this is about, you know. And please, folks, call me if you want to visit our Seminole Spirit Group, okay? And
yeah,
we'd love
sure
to see that.
Yes, and Mark, I'll make sure to show you. I'll make sure I get with you later, and we'll print it on. We'll get you to the page where you can write it in the comment section.
Thank you so much.
Okay? I'll let you go. Tell Maureen I wish my best. Love you. Don't want to keep you up past
thank
your bedtime.
You,
and I'm right, after
you,
a few calls, I'm going to close.
Love
off.
You, brother.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. Anyway, audience, that was Mark, and I'm going to let him go, but that's the synopsis of the program, and I just want to remind you, if anyone wants to call in and comment, they're more than welcome to. It's 1-424-243-9540. Call in if you want. I know it's getting late, and I hope it's been good. Anyway, but in synopsis, that's about the coping strategy, and it's still something to be aware of. The lesson to be learned is, no matter how we, no matter how well we deal with this, no matter how well we create coping strategies, the reality is the one fact in terms of injury to the brain is it does not heal. There is no technology that makes brain injury heal. And I just want to remind everyone of that. I'm going to check in on a call, see if they want to participate. If not, I'll just let them go. Hello?
Yes. How are you doing?
How are you doing? My name is Bill. I'm the host. I'm asking you if you want to, do you want to comment on the program or not?
Yes. Name's Michael.
Michael, okay. What's up, Michael? Do you have a question or you want to share something about the program and stuff?
June 9th, 2005, motorcycle accident, midnight. Thankfully, it was a field, not, you know, on the pavement or highway. But I was with a physiatrist
mm-hmm.
who was in charge of St. Joe Regional Medical Center, and I was doing outpatient, thankfully, after my 12-and-a-half-day Malcolm disc coma, and I was in a couple different hospitals for a few weeks. And I was released from my father and stepmother, and I was going up to South Bend, Mishawaka for therapy. And
Mike, what part of the country?
Midwest, Central.
Okay. Okay.
Indiana.
And,
Northern Indiana.
Indiana.
Notre Dame,
okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm in Georgia, so that's fine. Doesn't matter. And so what was the what did you face when you came out of it? What issues?
Balance, walking, riding. Good Lord, I tried to do a master's program that you graduate in 11 and a half months, and I was on a 2-year track, and I was still lost, you know, and
You couldn't absorb the information. You couldn't do it. Did it exhaust you?
Absolutely. I'd test out a 100, 200 level courses easily, and I would sit in, take 300 level courses. And that was a challenge, but 400 levels, you know, you needed speech and do group projects. I just didn't want my grade affected by others in the group, you know.
Right.
I wanted to take care of it myself.
Right. And how old were you when that happened?
33 and a quarter.
Married at the time or not?
No, divorced.
Okay. And so what did it affect your ability to earn a living afterwards?
Thankfully, I had 40 quarters in, but it took 8.5 years to process through Social Security
Right.
No, with the recent two raises, I'm up to 1,800. But you know, your buying power has went down, you know, quite a bit.
Yeah, actually, it's almost like I'd rather have less inflation and
yes.
keep the raise. You know, yeah. If you do the math,
yeah,
right?
Give my $12.50. Yeah, give my
give me $12.50 and don't charge me $8 for gas. You know, so whatever.
Yeah, I know,
but,
right? Yes, sir.
I mean, you know, they're gonna get you one way or the other. Sometimes you feel, but have you been through lots of therapy and stuff like that?
Thankfully, I was okay, I guess, to an aspect on physical therapy. I'm obese now with the methimazole. I got thyroid issue. And, you know, I was trying to coordinate things with my new primary doctor, who is under 2 years with me, and, you know, doesn't know much about the brain injury or the Graves' disease issue, but I have Graves' disease ophthalmology now, and you know, I have 4 or 5 different medical people speaking into my life, and they don't know much about the brain injury. And I just wanted to comment on the head person, you know, 18 years ago, 18 and a half years, or whatever, 17 and a half years ago was a physiatrist. And that, you're talking about internal medicine, and, I'm sure they had a couple chapters and a few questions.
Is current doctors becoming more educated about your injury?
Losing interest in doctors and physicians, and got to get to a legal state so I can do my indica THC consumption, not on a perverse issue, but yeah, go ahead.
But I think since you're probably going to be under some kind of medical care,
right?
Even though you're not, I know how you feel. I went through heart surgery. I've been through the TBI. There's a part of me that don't want to see doctors. You know. But what I've been careful to do, and this is something that you can use, look at it like a football plan and building a team, if you want to use a sports analogy. I don't know if you like football, but that would be a good one.
Absolutely,
And what I've done with my doctors, and I've dumped a few and added a few, I managed to get in each area I need doctors, and I probably have 7 or 8 of them. I manage to only have ones I have good relationships with, and they're all on the same page as. And I have a neurologist that's treated me since the beginning, and I use him as a quarterback because, as I had when I told you I had open heart surgery, well, when I went through the open heart surgery. One of the big issues I go through there, you know, I had went through a very good, successful treatment of my heart surgery. I had an open heart surgery, you know, 6 month hospital stay, 2 different ones, right? Huge amount of time,
right?
And I mean, I literally wanted to pull the tubes out of me and walk out the door. I thought about it.
Oh, I did.
Times.
I did.
I'm out of here. One more bedpan and I'm gone. You know, but I couldn't do it because, you know, you're dealing with your chest cut open. You know, if you fell, you could kill yourself. Okay? So there was limits to what I could do. Right. I mean,
face plant, yes. But,
But what happened is, Mike, I experienced, as a TBI survivor, they kept me up all the time because, you know, when they're dealing with your heart, they're constantly poking with you. And I couldn't sleep. And I was up for so many days, like 3 or 4 days, I started to hallucinate.
Right.
Well, being an experienced team.
I say something about that?
Sure.
When I was
go ahead.
To... Hook Rehabilitation in Indianapolis, Community Hospital East, the old one, they had the people watch over your room so you don't get out and all. And she talked on her phone constantly, you know, big old Mama Jane. And I said, look, you need to shut that phone off and get out of my door. How can I get any sleep, you know? But, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
And when you're a TBA survivor, those things disturb you worse.
Yes.
Because we require a balance to rest and stuff. Everything should be time, a comfort level. And guess what hospitals that deal with open heart surgery don't have? They come in all hours of the time just to poke you.
Right.
They want to wake you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they think they're doing wonderful. How you doing?
Contradictory.
Oh, yeah,
yes. Contradictory.
Yeah. I'm going to just walk in your room. Think about how invasive it is. Pull up a sheet and stick a needle in you. Oh, real nice. You know, a couple of times I literally told them, no, I'm not giving. No. Anyway, so I got along with my nurses, but they disrupted my sleep order so much I couldn't sleep for 4 days. I started to see things. Of course, being a smart person, I didn't tell them I was seeing things because I didn't want them to think I was crazy, because these people do not understand anything to do with TBI. And I didn't want them to think I was crazy. So finally, after looking at the doctors with all these colors going over them like Christmas lights of all different kinds, the nurse comes in and saw me looking around and says, what'd you tell the doctor about no sleep? And she says, he said you acted like you were fine. And she says, are you sure you're fine? You've been up 4 days. I said, I need a drug. She says, I don't know. I said, lady, I didn't tell him. I'm looking at hallucinations all over the room. She says, are you serious?
Wow.
Yes, I'm seeing. And that's when she got out of the room. She called the doctor. So what I finally had to do, I had to have my neurologist, who originally treated my brain injury like in 2002, call the doctors, the head, surgeons and all these doctors, to advise them on my condition. And I told them I had a TV, so they understand it. So my suggestion to you, to bring it back to you, it's probably a good idea to realize you need to get each doctor that you have, go to different ones. You got the Medicare to pay for it. Get a head doctor that understands it, and then get a team of doctors under him that understand it. And
get a
have
doctor?
That.
What was the
what in other words,
doctor? What is
get a head doctor, do you have a neuropsychologist? Do you have a neurologist?
He retired, and no, I don't.
I would. There's no neuro. You don't have any neuro. She retired. I would go to a neurologist. And I would get treated by him. You might see him once a year and just get updated, and so that you can provide the information to your other caregivers so they have an understanding. Does that make sense?
It does, and I've tried, and the guy behind us went through middle school and high school he's a medical doctor, but he fronts as a neurologist, but he has no training in that except his tenured as being a doctor, and he has a neurological center, and he's just making all kinds of money off of the Silver Sneaker folk, and now I'm there now, with a disability. I'm 50, be 51 here in a couple months, and I'm just like, you're wasting my time. I went off on his office staff, and I'm like, look, I got you everything you need, and you weren't even able to open up the documents. How can he even speak into if I have gray matter or whatnot? And, he's saying this and that, and I'm just like, oh, my goodness, I had better conversations when I did my Boy Scout projects, 20 years ago. I utilized you
for some merit badges. And I snap, and I understand. I embarrass myself, and I apologize and all that, but that time's past.
What you ought to do is, over time, piecemeal, just make sure you find doctors on each category you need them for that you're comfortable with. And that now you can't do it all at once. It's not like you're going to switch every doctor. But the ones that you don't think you're community, get rid of them. I have backups to each doctor, and I switched out.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I make sure. Matter of fact, I have good relationships with every doctor I see. They're all on the same page, and they've all been educated on my TBI. As much as they're needed. I mean, my ear doctor doesn't need to know much.
Yes.
Right. I mean, I don't care. But, and I would find a quarterback who's a neurologist who can deal with it at times that is apropos to your situation so that when you do have to go for treatments of various kinds, he can explain it to these caregivers. Like I said, I went to the best heart treatments in the state of Georgia. But I had to have my neurologist educate these surgeons, because guess what, these surgeons who are wonderful at treating you for the heart, but guess what knowledge they have on the brain? That
a chapter that, 30 years ago and had two test questions about it.
Exactly. You have more knowledge. Do you understand?
Oh, totally. 100%.
Yes. So
I try to do all this. I try to go to Fort Wayne, Indiana, the second largest city in Indiana, and I tried to get Dupuytren's contracture on both of my ring fingers, get that taken care of, my thyroid, my Graves' disease. Well, they want to take my thyroid out. I said, that doesn't cure Graves' disease. And instead of taking a tablet to slow down your hyperthyroid, they want to take it out, and I still have to take a pill to supplement the thyroid, and I don't want to have that. You know what?
I
believe my brain injury is facilitating the antibodies, you know, the self-imposed, but I don't know anything about that stuff. They don't want to take
my
thyroid
out.
Have
you had instances like we discussed in the program tonight?
I didn't get on early, but I got on after 11. And
I see. Okay. All right.
I got the guy's name, and I don't know when he meets on Fridays, but it's a call-in number, or is that for coming together? And with him?
If you call him, you can. He'll hook you up to. Do you have a computer?
I'm in a very rural area, and there's no Wi-Fi, so I try to use his phone, and I max out quite quick, and I got one through AARP, Medicare Complete, and then I switched all that insurance with Humana, and, they sell you on the benefits, but I sold insurance for 12 years, so, you know, I kind of know the ins and outs of some of the stuff, and...
You don't have internet, huh?
Oh, I'm very limited, and I can go to the library, but it's 10 miles away, and I don't drive.
I'm working on it. Do you like the rural area?
Oh yeah, I do. Especially coming from Fort Wayne and all the LGBTQ community, and I'm like, just stay away from me. I stayed at a shelter a couple of weeks, and all the preaching the gospel and all Christian Foundation, that they're all, you know, queer and gay. I'm like, I'm not interested. Don't quit hitting on me. You know, whatever. I can volunteer and I can do the dishes or whatever, but that's what causes me the most pain is what you're asking me to do, is sweep and mop and clean. And that's where I have back trouble. You know, I have arthritis and blah, blah, blah. I don't want to hear this stuff, you know?
Well, then it's time to hit the road. Forget it.
Oh, they're like one of the top 20 of 800 institutions in America. And, you know, it's hard to say where we're at in the 20, but I'm like, applaud, good for you. I'm happy. I'm not going to join your fraternity, you know?
I got you. Do you want his number again to call him?
I got it, and I got his web page and all that from.
Yeah.
I thought I could find that on there, but
maybe we'll find. Yeah, it's like I said, And this topic was probably for people like you. And I mean,
what was the topic called? Is it recorded? I'll probably review it back. And
yeah, you can listen to a replay. Basically, what we discussed is how higher functioning TBI or brain injury survivors manage to occasionally slip up. Remember, there's
okay.
the one thing, and that's what it amounts to. And so we discussed that, and I gave some of my personal experience. But anyway, yeah, it's called
single-mindedness, boredom, loneliness, you know, but you can only tolerate so much.
Yes. Anyway, but I'm going to let you go. It's a pleasure talking
right.
to you. I hope you become part of the program. I guess you'll listen to my program next month. Hopefully you'll get a chance to. And
once a month on Thursday night? Okay.
The second Thursday every month. And the second...
Okay.
Yeah, the second Thursday at you saw the time. What time
yeah.
is it in Indiana?
Oh, we're Eastern. We're same, I believe. Maybe not.
Okay,
yeah,
Eastern. Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, second Thursday. You have the phone number. It's the second Thursday at 10 o'clock. Second Thursday.
What was your name, sir?
My name is Bill.
Thank you, Bill. Okay.
Hey, and it's
How
a pleasure.
How close to Atlanta? How close to Atlanta are you?
About 20 miles outside.
Oh, nice.
20 miles.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. It's very comforting and stuff. It's really cool and stuff. Yes.
So High Falls State Park is an excellent rescue place, and Miss Mary Adams Evangelist saved me. She runs a fruit stand down there by Dollar General, and there's massage therapists
uh-huh.
at the back of a semi-trailer, but they got water slides and stuff. And anyway, I don't know if you're on the south end of Atlanta, or if you're on the
no,
north,
I'm on the north, the northwest.
Okay. Very nice.
Anyway,
okay.
But it's a pleasure, and remember, more mega notes, second Thursday every month, second Thursday at 10 o'clock.
I appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
And if you ever got questions, and Mark. His number is, if you want to get in touch with him, is tell him you found him through me or this program.
Okay.
His number is 404-434-7452. He'll hook you up.
And got that. And had you heard of physiatrist? Have you ever heard of that term?
I've heard of a physiatrist, yes. Yes,
okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it was new to me then, but that was, you know, near 20 years ago. But, yeah, thank you for your time.
Stay thinking. I'm looking forward to having you as a listener, and give me a call
sure.
I'll look forward to hearing from you in February 2nd, Thursday at 10 o'clock. Write it down, and you can listen and just call in.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good night.
Have a good day, Mike. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hello? Hello?
There's Michael. He's talking.
Have a good one, Michael.
Yeah.
Take care. Hello? Hello? Anyway, sorry about that, audience. Apparently, Mike left, and I want to thank you all for your... Thank you, Michael, for listening, and my little technical issues. Sometimes these things don't work perfectly, but I'm going to sign off the program. And I think that was the best we could do tonight. Anyway, but I want to thank you all for listening, and I'm going to sign off. It's just about ending, and we'll see you next month. I do want to remind everyone, just a little news reminder, that even though corona has been lessened to a great deal, there are people that are still getting it. So if you have health conditions, I do think I did get the fourth shot, which is the combination for the COVID-19 and the Omicron. So it does both. It was the fourth one I got last week. So cover yourself, and I suggest you talk to your health provider if you're in a riskful situation and overweight, and get your vaccine. It's not going to hurt anybody, and I haven't heard anybody dying from it, so a little precaution is probably the best rule, and hopefully it'll be over with, and that'll be the end of it. It becomes some nuisance. Anyway, reminder to do that, get your chance, and I'd take care of it, especially if you have underlying health conditions, and talk to a general practitioner doctor to make sure. Anyway, this is Bill. I'm going to sign off. Wish you all a very good new year. Hope it's been good. I'll see you next month on the second Thursday at 10 o'clock. Until then, this is Bill with Solutions Today signing off. Have a wonderful month, and God bless, and I'll talk to you soon. I'll speak to you next month. Enjoy.